Okay, welcome back. I'm just barely getting through reading the questions, never mind getting to answer the questions, so I'm going to have to apologize for even putting the question box out, because I don't know how much I can... I'm aware that this is a huge topic, and because it maps onto so many things, psychology and health and relationships and work and well-being and mindfulness and meditation and aging, and like there's so many related conditions that, and I get there's a lot of, you know, questions and in the room, and I feel it's, you know, and from that perspective it's going to be incomplete, right? What's mostly happening today is me sort of presenting what I think is important in terms of relating to ADHD from the perspective of these teachings, right? And it's just one tiny slice of, you know, the panorama of any one of our lives, right? So forgive me in advance I can only do so much in one day, right? You know, maybe what this needs is a follow-up, you know, six-week class where we can really sort of go into some of these issues. Yeah, it's a good idea. Yeah. So, you know, this is, as I mentioned, this is sort of a stretch for me to do, and someone just came up to me and said they've been coming here for 40 years and it's the first time they've heard anybody mention it, even though there's so many people afflicted with it. This is the beginning. I don't know what will come out of this, but I'm appreciating your presence and questions, and I'll do the best I can to sort of meet what's here. And I'm just hoping, trusting that what I've chosen to share and offer is gonna land for each one of you. There will be some pieces that are helpful for you. Particularly in your way you relate to yourself and you relate to this experience. From the perspective of these teachings, these Buddha Dharma teachings, the way I understand practice is there's, with mindfulness, there's two things going on. There's two primary things that are going on that we need to attend to in any moment, with anything, with any experience. There's what's happening and how we relate to it. What's happening and how we relate to it. There's your distractible mind and how you relate to it. There's your emotional volatility and how you relate to it. There's your forgetting and not following through of tasks, of letting people down, and how you relate to that. Right, that's the sort of basis of our experience, and it's the basis of this practice. What's happening? Can I be aware of what's happening? Can I be aware of how I relate to it? So each time that I mess up, inverted commas, forget to do something, don't follow through, lose a thread, lose a file, etc., etc., each time it happens, I notice that, and I try to notice how I feel about that, or I try to notice how reactive I am to that, or how judgmental I am to that, or how frustrated I am by that, or how guilty or shame I feel about that. Right? That's the practice. What's happening, in this case, the functioning or the consequence of your ADD internal and external life. And then how you relate to that, how you relate to the fallout, really, you know. So, like someone just raised this brilliant question about, you know, and a few people have raised this already with me about, you know, what about the gifts? You know, there's a lot of gifts come with, you know, we have divergent thinking. We tend to be very creative. We tend to be very associative. We can synthesize a lot of big ideas. We tend to be so creative that we generate so much, but then the actionizing, the making that actionable is often where we fall short. We've got so much ideas, so many creativity, and we kind of get lost in the mass, and then maybe nothing happens. You know, or we get overwhelmed, or we feel bad for having all these great ideas but not being able to execute them. Right? That's both a gift and a curse. Right? Anybody relate to that? Yeah, a lot of hands. Right? I do. I've got so many ideas, and I have to like slow down. Yeah, slow down. Like, I'm going to do so much. You know, and that's where sometimes, you know, coaching helps and support helps, and, you know, some of these methodologies that help with task management help. You know, all that stuff has a place. But I do want to talk a little about emotions before we break for lunch, because I think it's a really important part of this experience of ADHD. For myself, and this where that motivated this day long was around feeling the multiplicity of emotions that come up with this. You know, for me, volatility, quite reactive, frustration, quick to anger, quick to be irritated, and then that's the sort of the baseline of the response of to experience for me. But yours might be similar, different. And then what the Buddha calls the second arrow is how we respond to that creates more suffering. So the second arrow is how we relate to those emotions that come up. So we might feel shame because we can't perform a simple task. We can't remember a simple request that someone asked of us. We can't follow through with a thread, a text thread or an email thread, because we can't remember who the person was and what the subject was and if we ever emailed about it or not. That's from experience, sound familiar? And I had this really important conversation. I can't remember who it was, but it was really important. We talked about something that I knew I had to do something on, but I can't remember. I can't find the thread because I can't remember their name. You know, we live very complex lives and we have multiple conversations. I noticed, like, I'm on a lot of meetings, like you are probably, a lot of meetings in the day, Zoom meetings, phone meetings. And then it's like, I know there was a few action items, but, you know, and I know there's good Zoom AI software that's hopefully taking notes somewhere. I haven't figured out how to do that. And sometimes there's people in the meeting who are taking notes and telling you what your action items are, but often there's not. And you put the phone down, that was a really great meeting, and it's like, and then you jump onto another meeting, and then it's like, oh, but that meeting before, it was like three things I had to do, gone. You know, that's life. And then what do we feel? The second hour comes in, either with thought or feeling, we feel shame. Or we feel hopeless because this pattern seems so long-lasting and pervasive. Or we feel guilt for letting people down. Or we feel quickly overwhelmed just by sometimes... I mean, how many of you in the morning get to your desk, whatever equivalent of your desk is, your laptop, your whatever, your workstation, and you see all the tasks to do, and you already feel kind of slightly defeated or deflated, or because you feel overwhelmed. Because it's like, how do I organize? How do I prioritize? Anybody feel that way? Yeah, pretty common. Yeah. So this book that I read, Your Brain Isn't Broken, or something like that, I forget exactly the title, I think that's the title, she had some really interesting things to say which I found helpful. I'm just going to share a few of them. She says, the brain confuses little everyday inconveniences with major threats. We feel flooded with emotions that make this situation feel intolerable, even if it's a minor thing. We feel deeply wounded or take offense at even the most gentle criticism. And sadness and dysthymia and shame are the more common threads that run through ADHD experience. And then she started talking about one of the reasons why emotional reactivity is a common part of ADHD. She said, instead of relying on the prefrontal cortex for planning, for short-term memory and impulse management... So that's more, you know, the sort of executive functioning of the brain. instead of relying on the executive function, PFC, for planning, short-term memory, and impulse management, those with ADHD rely on the emotional centers in their brain to remember things, make decisions, and motivate themselves. They use emotions to think, react, remember, plan, and act. And so what would, for someone without this experience of ADHD, might just use, you know, a certain rationality, a certain cognitive function, a certain other kind of executive functions. There's a lot more emotionality involved in any functioning that we do. And so when those things malfunction, there's more emotional reactivity because we're already emotionally tied up into the functioning. Does that make sense? It certainly made a lot of sense to me when I read it. I'd never had anybody explain it that way. She says, instead of a butler managing our lifestyle task in the prefrontal cortex, we have an angry neighbor in the emotional centers of our brain shaming and threatening us. Which for me, is I experience as the inner critic, but it might not just be the critic, but there's a kind of a emotionality center shaming and threatening. Yeah. So it becomes hard to make decisions and to execute in certain tasks because there's already a sort of emotional turmoil, turbulence, or intensity. And then she was talking about a sensitivity to feedback. She says when ADHD folks listen through their emotions, not through their prefrontal cortex, they misinterpret what's said. They listen for meta messages and create stories that interpret events in a way fortifying a broken belief system about ourselves. And I gave an earlier example of someone asked me to do a simple errand. Oh, can you pick this thing up on the way home? And I don't. And they said, did you do that thing? And I interpreted as, I'm not enough. I'm stupid, you know. I'm unreliable. I'm undependable, right? And our partners and our colleagues, you know, fairly, you know, like us to be dependable and reliable, right? It's not too much to ask, but for us, at times, it actually is. I feel really sad just saying that, you know. So I was talking to a friend of mine this morning about how he read an article recently, maybe somebody can give me the reference, I don't know the reference, I think it was in the Times, about how people with ADHD project certain things. And I think what we project is judgment and shame, and people thinking that about us, that we're inefficient, that we're unreliable, that we're, you know, enough. So it's like a stepping stone. So as a consequence of that, as a consequence of disappointment, letting people down, not feeling reliable, dependable, or certain, whatever, then underneath that is shame, unworthiness, you know, low self-esteem. Right? It just trickles down. You know, the simplest thing, and there's proof. I'm useless. You know, there's use. I'm not, you know, no wonder they're always pissed off with me, you know. And underneath that, of course, in our young selves, our young parts is, you know, I'm not dependable, I'm not reliable, I'm not useful or functional, I'm not good enough, I'm unworthy, and I'm going to lose love. I'm unlovable. And it's super painful, you know, that cascade, right? And it happens like that, you know. And in relationship, you know, in my relationship, it happens very quickly. You know, my partner's very loving and very kind and very forgiving, but I project that she's disappointed again because I forgot something again. I didn't follow through again. I didn't show up in a certain way, again, right? And it's exhausting, you know. It happened yesterday. This is something that I also noticing a lot more now. Like, there'll be something very significant that she's doing in her life, you know, an important meeting, important conversation, maybe with a family member who's, you know, really sick, or, you know, terminal diagnosis or something, and I won't remember. I won't remember to ask about it, right? And it's, of course, really important to her. And it's important to me too, but my ability to retain that and then to track that and to follow through and go, hey, how was that conversation? Often doesn't happen. So what's the impact? Oh, he doesn't care. Well, I'm not going to say anything because he didn't ask me, right? And it's nobody's fault, right? And that's why we get into conflict. You know, how, you know, maybe you have family members, how come you didn't call? You know, my son had this important, whatever it is, graduation or, you know, medical crisis. Oh, we didn't call. We forgot. It's not because we don't care. It's because our brains don't track that way. And not always, and this is not a blanket statement, but often my experience. And it's super painful. You know, it's like we're letting ourselves down, you know, through no fault of our own. Right? It's not our fault that you forget. It's not that your fault that you seemingly mess up, you know. And if that's, I think I said that earlier, like if that's what you remember, that it's not your fault that these things happen. It's part of the functioning of this experience that we have to live with, and we have to learn to accept ourselves and be kind to ourselves and love ourselves and forgive ourselves like every day. But it might be every hour, really. I mean, it feels to me like every hour one of these little hiccups is happening. I mean, really. And sometimes it's more than every hour. But I could track it. I could log it. Oh, there's something else. Oh, yeah. I go down, I put the laundry in the, I think we're downstairs, we got these garages below us where the laundry is. I go down, put the laundry in. I forget to close the door. You know, we got our bike stolen because the door was, you know. I put the laundry in, and 3 days later, like, something smells really moldy. Oh, shit, the laundry. Oh, God. I hate that smell. Oh, shit. You have to dry them and then wash them. And it's like, oh, my gosh. So. She said I just reminded her that she left hers in. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, it's comical, the amount of, you know, I could just, you know, we could all tell story after story, you know. I was teaching a retreat, I was in the wilderness, God knows how I got a call. I think they just got satellite phone at this wilderness retreat center, and it's Spirit Rock. I'm like, why is Spirit Rock calling on a Monday evening? And they said, Mark, are you, is everything okay? Are you stuck in traffic? Are you, the class started 5 minutes ago. I'm like, oh, shit. I'll be there next week, next Monday, you know, and it's humiliating, you know. So I'm saying all this because it's so important that we presence the emotional impact and the pain of it. Yeah. So. So let's sit with it. I want us to do a little meditation on meeting ourselves with kindness, compassion. So I want you to, as much as you can, find a comfortable posture, sitting with some ease, however that is. Bring awareness to your breath, bring awareness to your heart, which is the center of your chest. And if it helps to put a hand there. And I want you to call to mind a time, maybe from today, maybe from this week, where you, as it were, messed up. Some of the examples I've been given. You forgot something, you let someone down, you didn't follow through, you made a mistake. Yeah, just call to mind one of those things in the last few days, last week, something that sort of like has a little bit of a sting to it, a little bit of an ouch. And maybe somebody really was upset by what you did or didn't do. Just, if you can, just notice, what am I feeling? What's present here? Oh, I feel guilty, or shame, or sad, or bad, or hopeless, helpless. Feeling, breathing, it might not be easy to name it, but if you can, just sort of guess in the ballpark, what am I feeling when I remember, recall doing those things? And then just breathe with that emotion. Just feel it, name it. You might take a deeper breath and exhale sort of into the heart. And then with the practice of self-compassion, we are turning towards our suffering. We're turning towards our pain. Feeling the suffering of this experience of having ADHD. Maybe it's a cluster of feelings, sad, frustration, anger, feeling unworthy, deficient, lonely, anxious. And then the practice of self-compassion is just turning to ourselves, meeting ourselves with care, with compassion, and we can express words that express our compassion. And you can use the phrases I'm going to share, you can use phrases of your own, keeping them simple. May I be free of pain and suffering. May I be free of pain and suffering. Or may I be free of the pain that comes from having ADHD. May I be free from suffering of the pain that comes with ADHD. May I be free from pain. May I be free from suffering. I be loving and forgiving to myself? And may I hold my suffering with care, with love, with kindness. May I hold myself, my suffering, with love, with kindness. And if it's hard to wish that for yourself, hard to feel compassionate towards yourself, sometimes it can be helpful to call to mind someone you know who is loving and compassionate with you, or has been loving and compassionate with you. Maybe a teacher, friend, therapist. Maybe it's an archetypal figure like the Buddha, Jesus, Kuan Yin, Tara. Might be your dog that lovingly accepts you just as you are. Or your cat. May I be free from pain and suffering. May I hold myself and my pain with kindness, with ease. Continuing to sense your heart, any memories, any things that come up for you, that ways that you've feel like you failed or let people down, or all the different ways that ADHD can disrupt and cause overwhelm. May I be free from pain and suffering. So I'm going to close with a poem from Daniel Mead. Again, just let these words kind of wash over you. If you would grow to your best self, be patient, not demanding, accepting, not condemning, nurturing, not withholding, self-marveling, not belittling, gently guiding, not pushing and punishing. For you are more sensitive than you know. Mankind is tough as war, yet delicate as flowers. And we open only to warmth and light. The need to grow is fragile as a fragrance, dispersed by storms of will, returning when those storms are still. So accept yourself. Respect yourself. Attend your sensitivity. A flower cannot be opened with a hammer. A flower cannot be opened with a flower. Be patient, accepting, nurturing, self-marveling. Okay, so maybe just shout out just what word is present for you, just reflecting on the emotional dimensions of this experience, doing a little meditation, compassion, guilt,
acceptance,
defensiveness, relief, cathartic, sadness, humor, love, forgiveness, tender, gentleness, optimism, goodness, awe, contentment, Yeah, so a range of things to be expected. Tenderness. So this is tender work. It's not easy work. So just like when I do my workshops on the inner critic, which is also tender and painful, I always I really appreciate people coming to do this work, right? You signing up to do a day looking at your ADHD, it's like, that's not a bundle of fun, right? You could have gone to Point Reyes and hiked and had a great time, but no, you did the serious business of looking at this, you know, in yourself, for your family, or whoever. So, you know, just bows to your goodness, you know, and your good heart for coming here, wanting to learn, wanting to understand, wanting to find ways to work with it. Not easy. This is not easy work, but nor is life. And better look at it and work with it and find ways than not, because it will, hopefully, you'll come away with less suffering, you know, or at least ways to meet the suffering, you know. So, okay, so it's lunchtime. So we'll take an hour for lunch. A couple of things, logistics. So, this is the book that I wrote some years ago called Make Peace With Your Mind. There's some of them left in the bookstore. And I do feel like this is an accompaniment to this work, because it's about how mindfulness and compassion can free you from the inner critic. And so if you do have a strong critic, you know, it's a good manual for some practical tools about that. So I have other books in the bookstore. I keep calling it the library. One of these books I've written is called From Suffering to Peace. It's a true promise of mindfulness. If you want to learn more about mindfulness, it's not a bad resource, but there's lots of other good books on there, mindfulness. This is my latest book called The Field Guide to Nature Meditation. I'm going to talk about nature practice later, because I think ADHD and doing meditation outside is actually a really good marriage and much more conducive for well-being, given the kind of attention that we have to take our meditation outside. And look, the sun's shining. It's telling, yes, come outside. It's beautiful. So we'll have an hour for lunch. As I think mentioned, you can eat lunch out there in the foyer. You can eat lunch outside. And then after lunch, after you've eaten your lunch, you know, take care of yourselves. Some of you might want to walk. There's places to walk. We're not allowed to walk beyond the gate, which is like you walk up the road, there's a gate, don't walk beyond there, it's a silent retreat. But there's hikes this way, and there's one hike that way, there's a hike down through the meadow and up around this hill. So if you need to get out and walk, move your body, it's been quite a sedentary day, get some fresh air. But some of you might also feel like, man, I'm exhausted, so eat your lunch, and then you can come in here. But we'll keep this room silent, So if you want to rest, you want to lie down, you want to take a nap, just come in here, put these square mats out, and take a nap. I usually try and squeeze a nap in when I'm doing these things because it's tiring. And then, some of you might just want to connect with these lovely people. So please connect with each other. Or, you know, if you came alone, just, you know, I invite you to welcome each other and just, you know, sit down beside someone and say, hey, you know, mind if we hang out and have lunch together? And please get to know each other. And then some of you are like, no, get me to the hills. I want to be quiet. So also take care of yourself. If you want to be quiet, take care of yourself. And I'll see you at 2 o'clock. And I'll stick around a little bit for any questions. Thanks.
If you are planning to or could speak in addition to having the self.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.